This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, and I'm Jefferson Smith. New York Times reporting today that Rod Rosenstein suggested that he secretly record Trump and discuss the 25th Amendment. Suggested last year as Deputy Attorney General 2 weeks into his stint that he secretly record the president to expose the chaos consuming the administration and discussed recruiting cabinet members to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove Trump from office for being unfit. Now, I don't know if this bears relationship to Trump's tweets this morning, but people who are part of the X-Ray FM community, my home station in Portland, Oregon, and shout out to our folks, love y'all, you may have heard me say this before. When Donald Trump tweets something crazy, what we urge is not immediate reaction, but it's to take a breath, scan the room, and see what else is going on. This morning, Trump questioned the credibility of Dr. Blasey Ford, the accuser of Brett Kavanaugh. He could have done that on any day. Undoubtedly, as soon as he tweets that, causes a firestorm. Everybody's got to respond to the president. Hey, don't shame accusers, president. We are required morally, politically, rhetorically to say so. And I thought at that moment, I was like, uh-oh, Jeff, try to follow your own rule. Take a breath, scan the room, see what else is going on. I didn't know anything that was going on in particular that seemed, I shouldn't say out of the ordinary. Every darn thing these days is out of the ordinary. But that answered my question. So I said, well, maybe it's just he was watching Fox and Friends and tweeted something on the bathroom, whatever. But then I see today, on the last day of fall, on the fall before the fall, the story in the New York Times of Rod Rosenstein suggesting that he should secretly record Trump and also discussed the 25th Amendment to remove the president. And giving credit to the producer of this show during the break, who said, I wonder if Trump will use this Friday, when everybody is paying attention to other stuff, to fire Rod Rosenstein. That's a good question. Right now, let us spend a few more minutes on, and there will be many more minutes spent after that, to be sure, but we're also going to be talking about impeachment and more than impeachment, and the calls that people have been waiting very patiently. And thank you for waiting patiently. We have one more guest. We are honored to be joined by Karthik Ganapathy of MoveOn.org. Karthik, how you doing?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. What is MoveOn doing with respect to the Kavanaugh appointment and hearings process? What are you hearing out there and anything you anticipate? I like to ask three questions at once because it makes my job dumber. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me start from the last one first. Well, what we're hearing is just, you know, I mean, a lot of people, as I'm sure you're hearing as well, a lot of people are really outraged and really upset by what we're seeing in response to the allegations that Dr. Blasey Ford has bravely put out there. You know, and I mean, this basic premise that the hearing next week should be a trial of the veracity of her claims, or the sort of starting from an assumption of she's lying. I think that really rubs a lot of people the wrong way. And these aren't, you know, this isn't just sort of a partisan Democratic issue, right? We're seeing public opinion research. I think an NBC poll yesterday showed that most Americans now, or more Americans, oppose the nomination of Judge Kavanaugh than support him, which wasn't the case 2 months ago. So, look, I think Americans believe her, and the problem here is that Republicans in the Senate clearly don't. Right? We're seeing Mitch McConnell, the leader of the Senate, say that, you know, he told the Values Voter Summit this morning that he intends to approve Judge Kavanaugh, regardless of what happened. Right? This isn't a good faith effort. This isn't a good faith.
And do we have reporting on his comments of his rationale? Was it that she's lying, or she's confused, or it doesn't matter, or if it matters, that he's better now?
I don't know, and I don't even know which one I'd prefer in that situation. Right? They're all pretty awful. If you look at it, assume that she's telling the truth and ignore it anyway. That's bad. If you assume she's lying, that's bad. There's no good way to explain the actions here. Where you have, you know, obviously, the same person who delayed the confirmation of Merrick Garland for a year, suddenly imbued by this sudden sense of urgency over someone who, you know, pretty likely committed sexual assault, in his youth. I mean, this is a serious thing. So I think, to answer your question, well, we're hearing a lot of concern from people over the state of the situation, and so we're trying to figure out how best to organize. Obviously, it's a fast moving situation. The hearing, where we're now hearing that the hearing might be on Wednesday instead of Monday, so we're still trying to figure out exactly how we can organize people, how we can organize sort of a national show of solidarity for
them. I want to talk strategies for a moment, and as Move On wrestles with this, because I don't know what percentage of Move On readers and clickers and movement members are Republicans. Okay, and my hunch is the percentage is somewhat slow. You might know the answer. Go ahead.
Very low.
Yeah.
No, sorry. Yeah, it's very, very low. I think these are. I think there are a few, but I don't have the exact statistical breakdown.
Sure.
But very low.
So we know right now the decision is up to the Republicans. I mean, yeah, there's some Democrats who could vote along with them, but that is the decision is up to them. So how do you think most in terms of, okay, how do we elevate the discussion so that some of that might bleed into media that does reach some Republicans and some Republicans might reach some other Republicans? Is it more about being prepared for the coming election to make sure that there is an appropriate national reaction to what the Republicans decide to do? How do you think that through strategically?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think we're trying to like focus right now on just stopping the confirmation, right? We're trying to focus on this like one day, one week at a time. So we're not really thinking about November yet, except to say that we think, you know, it would be disastrous, I think, for the Republicans to do this over the objections of most of the American people. And I think that's clearly not just bad on a moral level, it's not just bad on a substantive level, it's also bad on a political level. So I think there's that. But as sort of a political matter, right now we're looking at focusing on the fight over the next week or so, to do everything we can to stop the confirmation of Judge Kavanaugh. Obviously there's a bunch of groups we're working in partnership with, like NARAL, and they've been pressing and pushing on this issue on Judge Kavanaugh's confirmation in general for weeks, and obviously that fight has intensified in recent days as these allegations have come forward. So I think for our part, we're really just to talk strategy. I mean, the strategy is basically to focus on this one day at a time, and do everything we can to stop this fight, because we're not taking it for granted that this is a done deal. Right, McConnell may want to confirm this. He may tell the Values Voter Summit that he's gonna get this guy confirmed. But we're not taking that as a done deal. There are a lot of people with misgivings about this nominee. There are a lot of people who clearly believe what Christine Blasey Ford has put out there. And you know, I mean, I think there are a lot of people with serious concerns about the Supreme Court nominee. So this to me is an incredibly winnable fight. We just need to get in gear. And stay engaged over the next week or so.
And how do you? And we're about to go to break. How do you think about that winning? Is it as simple as Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski? Is it Jeff Flake? Is it some name that hasn't been said? You got 8 seconds.
Yeah, it's all of those.
Yeah.
It's all of those names, and then a bunch of others.
Thank you so much, Karthik Ganapathy of MoveOn.org. I'd ask where to go, but I'm guessing it's MoveOn.org.
That's right.
Thanks so much for being with us. This is the Tom Show.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. We're back on Free Speech TV. An honor to be here with you, and so thankful that you're with us. Susan has been waiting very patiently. Susan, thank you for waiting patiently. Thank you for watching on Free Speech TV. Are you still with us?
Yes, I am. And thank you for being there. I just have two things to say, and I'm going to try to do it quickly. I want to say that I'm really kind of appalled that more people are not donating during your campaign. If I can give, by God, I think darn near anybody can. You know, if everybody gave that watched and listened to your great show, you wouldn't be in the spot that you're in. Now, the second thing I want to say is I just happened to watch President Trump in his comments. He said that he just can't imagine that Kavanaugh would do such a thing to this Miss Ford. And, I mean, this is a thug. This is a man who tries, he's affiliated with the mafia all over the world. I wonder where her death threats are coming from. You know, here is a guy who paid a you know we're talking about $130,000 to keep her mouth shut. You know, he was overheard making a statement that it's okay, and laughed and thought it was so funny to grab women in their genitals.
Yeah.
You know,
I hadn't thought of the speculation that the death threats to Dr. Blasey Ford were anything other than the actions of mean-spirited bullies acting alone. I still think that Occam's razor would suggest that is the most likely the most likely scenario, but I hadn't thought of alternatives. But Susan from Mountain View, Arkansas, thank you. And I also want to say thank you for donating. People who, to Free Speech TV, also to your local purpose-driven media organization, that if there's going to be media that is not only driven by clicks, that's not only driven by profits for companies, there's going to have to be people like you, Susan.
Well, it's my pleasure. You do so much for the American people and teaching them just what is going on in the world. And that is so important. And I cannot imagine you not being there.
Well, Susan, thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Carol, we got just a little bit. You're on the line. You've also been waiting patiently from South St. Louis. Speak your piece.
Oh, wonderful. I'm online. I can't believe it. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I really want to talk about Kavanaugh, and it's making me crazy because everyone's talking about the rape accusation. Now, I know it wasn't an actual rape, but, you know, if you look up how often women lie about rape, I looked it up. 2%, 8%, maybe 10%.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the chances of her lying are just overwhelmingly, it's ridiculous. You know,
yeah.
If you're on the side of caution, it would be to believe her. It's crazy the way no one's talking about it.
And my own view, which I don't, you know, I don't want to be even humble as I offer it, but I fear that it's not even that the Republicans aren't at this point evaluating truth or fiction, but whether or not they even care. This is Tom's show. We'll be back. You're listening to Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson Smith. Some of you are watching it. Somebody who's been waiting very patiently, Russ on Free Speech TV in Portland, Oregon. Go ahead.
Yeah, three things, Jefferson. Number one, early in the show you had a gentleman on who thought that gasoline should be $25 a gallon. I just have to
say, is that how much he said? I don't remember how much he said it was supposed to. I know he said it raised, but I couldn't hear him exactly on the number he said. Was it that high? Anyway, keep going.
He said 25 a gallon.
Okay.
And I just have to say that this gentleman has never worked a minimum wage job, as I have, where having a vehicle is a condition of employment. You have no choice if you want to have the job, and there are millions of people in this country who are in that boat, and jacking up the price of gas, you know, in the name of whatever is just not fair at all.
So bear with us for a second. I want to feel free to respond to what I'm about to say. Tell me to jump in a lake. So yeah, $25 is an enormously high price. I did say, and after he spoke up, talking about a carbon tax, which would increase, not the $25, might only be a few pennies, might be some dimes, might be a dollar, but increase the price of gas. And what I do think is we have to redesign the American city, the American landscape, because if we keep population growth at the level we are at now, and if we keep fossil fuel consumption at the level per capita that we are now, and if we don't subscribe to the fiction that climate change isn't real and isn't human-caused, then it is only a matter of time, and some of that time is already happening, where there are lots of islands and atolls that won't exist anymore. I recognize that doesn't put food on the tables of people right now who need a car to get to work. How would you wrestle with it? Do you think it's, well, we shouldn't raise a gas tax at all, or we should raise it a little bit, or we should raise it, but then make sure that there's support for people so they can actually transport themselves? How do you think it through?
Well, I really don't want to get too deep into the weeds on this because I have a few other things I'd like to talk about. But I just don't think that it ought to be raised, you know, substantially, you know, beyond what the market is charging. And by the way, if Trump and Pompeo and Bolton get their wish and we have a war with Iran, and the Iranians shut down the Straits of Hormuz, you're going to see the price of gas go way up.
Right, and this is why to me the priority has got to be on gradually, and it's got to be somewhat gradual. I recognize it, but it's been way too gradual. We had a chance to do it and get it done during the Carter administration. There was a chance we could have meaningfully impacted the onward sweep towards climate change, but fossil fuels are already subsidized significantly, not only directly and not only through military might indirectly, but also indirectly by not internalizing the costs that fossil fuels offer. You said you had another thing. I know Tom's rule is usually one idea per person, but I appreciate your patience. Say your other one. I'll move to the next call.
Well, the one other thing I wanted to say, I just wanted to give a shout out to all my fellow senior citizens. I'm 68 years old. I'm on Medicare. The Emperor God, who now sits in the White House, promised on numerous occasions, all on videotape, that he would not touch Medicare, Social Security, or Medicaid. He lied. Advocating drastic cuts in all three of those programs. And if you're a senior citizen who voted for Trump in 2016 and you vote Republican in the midterm elections upcoming, you might as well just go get a razor and slit your own throat, because they're going to slit it for you.
Russ, thank you so much for calling. I want to respond. The other piece, one of the reasons why I would couple the carbon tax with sending people a check is precisely what Russ was saying, that anything we do that elevates the price of carbon will impact the lives of people who use a little bit more carbon in their life, or even just use a pretty regular amount of carbon. And that's why we should help them and send them a darn check back. And by the way, that's not an unfair thing to do. We didn't give birth to any of that. None of us made that carbon in the first place. None of it made that air. None of us made those trees. That was all made prior to us. It's only fair that we should share in the bounty, at least in some way, if we're going to plunder that bounty. And also, I really appreciated Russ's point. And let's elevate it just a little bit, if you'll allow me. And I think that you will. He said, Donald Trump said he wouldn't touch Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. Here's a problem. 75% of the federal budget goes to the following five things. This is a very helpful thing to know. For all of your coffee table conversations, for all of your water cool arguments, for all of your Twitter debates, this is a very useful thing to know. 75% of federal, give or take, 75% of the federal budget goes to the following five things: Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, service and national debt, and U.S. military. That is what the government does. That is how it spends its money. Again, let me say those five: Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, service and national debt, and U.S. military. That's three quarters of the federal budget. If you cut taxes significantly, there is no way to pay for those tax cuts unless you do something with Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, service and national debt, and U.S. military. We know that Trump doesn't want to and hasn't, and in fact has increased military spending. He doesn't want to decrease it. We know that all you do, you can't cut the debt unless you raise taxes or decrease spending in other ways. So that leaves, there must be major cuts in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. Entitlement reform was what Paul Ryan has made it plain. Is why they did it. They cut taxes first because they say, okay, and then make the Democrats, when the Democrats are in charge, make the Democrats cut those programs. Hard for the Republicans to do it. We'll just cut the taxes. We will just play Santa Claus and make the Democrats be the Grinch. Russ, I appreciate your call. We're going to take a break. We come back, we're going to do the lightning round, our speed round. We're going to go through calls, and I'm going to try to shut up so we can get more of your calls because we appreciate them. I want to say thanks to everybody. By the way, the call-in line here is 202-808-9925, 202-808-9925. And let me just finish with this thought in the middle of the break, or just before we go to the break. There will be calls again. There will be the discussion next week and up and through the election about whether or not Democrats should call for impeachment. It was thanks to a caller on this very show who made this point and processing and thoughts that I had while having the pleasure of being with you in this community, that we shouldn't be asking whether or not to call for impeachment. We have to call for more than impeachment. Donald Trump isn't the head of the snake. We got to transform this country through mechanism, not only through leadership. This is The Tom Show. I'm Jeff.
You're listening to The Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
This is The Tom Hartman Show. Coming back with your calls after these important messages. It is The Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson Smith. It is the last day of summer before the fall, and we're taking your calls. Viana from KPFK in Lancaster, California, you win the Most Patient Award. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I'm a 77-year-old survivor of a wedding night rape. I was 16 and the man was 27. So I'm a survivor. But what I wanted to say is, I wanted your opinion.
I'm so sorry.
But that's all right. 20 years of therapy. It helped. Yeah, and I had a beautiful marriage to a perfect man. My third marriage was perfect. But he died in 3 years. I have a story to tell. But anyway, I'm thinking about the Republican Party, and I wanted your opinion and my thoughts. The Republican Party is a fascist mafia now. The party can go ahead and try to kill Dr. Ford. And they're proud of it.
Well, what I'm going to do during this portion is I'm going to try to hold my thoughts towards the end. I want to hear from listeners who've been waiting patiently, but I so appreciate you sharing your story.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll respond to the question that you asked at the very end. Thank you so much, Viana.
I think they're really mafia. They're very dangerous.
I hear where you're coming from, and I'll offer my thoughts. Paul from WCPT, Ain't Afraid of Me, in Woodinvale, Washington. Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about the nature of trauma that Christine Blasey Ford may have experienced. And let me set it up this way. Now, Chuck Grassley has referred to this as a possible youthful indiscretion on the part of Brett Kavanaugh. So I thought I would put this in terms that possibly conservatives could understand. So let's say, let's take the sexual assault part out of it. Let's say that somebody pins you down. They're humping you, groping you, possibly covering your mouth. That's your airway. If she had had a weapon, a gun or a knife, would she have been justified in using it with lethal force? Let's recall that that was the justification that acquitted George Zimmerman, that Trayvon Martin may have been on top of him. And Trayvon Martin didn't even have a gun. So if you're a 15-year-old girl now, and you're at a place where you're not supposed to be, if the answer is yes, if she would be... Now, conservatives would definitely agree that if somebody's on top of you against your will, groping you, humping you, and covering your airway, you have a right to defend yourself. So if that's considered a life-threatening trauma to a 15-year-old, there's no question that this is what traumatic phobia is made out of. She wasn't supposed to be at a drinking party, whether she was drinking or not.
Yeah.
She nearly, in her perception, may have lost her life, of course she's not going to tell anybody about it. So if they think of it in those terms, then we can see that, yeah, this could be something that you hide or you keep to yourself for a long time. I mean, I was in a car accident when I was 19 years old.
Yeah.
As soon as we left and told my mom we were going to the drive-in, she said, "You guys, don't you go drinking and driving around." And that's exactly what we did. And as I was in slow motion headed for that oak tree, I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to get killed. My mom is going to kill me. I walked away without a scratch. My friends were injured, but I came home the next day, and I didn't tell my mother. This happened in 1979. I didn't tell my 89-year-old mother that until about 4 years ago.
Yeah. Appreciate your call. Chris, we're doing the speed round. Speak your piece in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Hey, Jefferson.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Jefferson.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you great.
Hey, sorry about that. Okay, thanks for taking my call. I want to say hi to Sean Taylor. I know she's there. Anyhow, Jefferson, I just wanted to express support for a couple of candidates. I'm working my tail off over here. I drive, and I was on the road, and that way I was kind of thinking to myself, I could get through if I'm on the road here. Anyhow, Melanie Stansberry is running for District 28 here in Albuquerque, and I'm really supporting her. She's got experience writing legislation on the Senate floor in D.C. She was former Obama staff. She's a great gal. She's from Farmington.
All right, that's one you said, too. Give the second one real quick.
Okay, Day Hockman V. Hill. She's running for District 15 over here in Albuquerque. Her main platform is focusing on reducing crime here in Albuquerque. We've got a recidivism issue, as does, I'm sure, many, many places across, you know, this great country of ours. And Day Hockman V. Hill, it's a new day for New Mexico. That's just nm.com.
Great.
Melanie Stansberry for New Mexico, just nm at Melanie Stansberry for New Mexico.com as well. So,
Chris, thank you so much. Appreciate your call. Jim from KPFK in Los Angeles, speak your piece. And by the way, we got a couple lines open. We're trying to do speed round to get in your calls on anything that goes Friday, the day before the fall. Call the number 202-808-9925. It's 202-808-9925. Jim from LA, go ahead.
Hey, Jefferson, and you 7 million intelligent listeners and viewers. Please make sure your vote is counted. I hope some of you 7 million come up with another idea or work this one. My idea is to go to every voting polling where you vote with a friend and a simple affidavit stating I voted 100% Democrat. Every affidavit is a legal document. And if we count our own votes and then the votes are different, you know, that would justify a recount. Anyhow, the vote has been stolen since 2000, and we have to have the House and the Senate. I think there is a blue tidal wave coming, but the red states are, you know, suppressing you. You might have heard Greg Palast, how they're just taking people out the voting rolls. So please make sure you are a registered voter and you have not been purged, and verify your vote. I'm going to try to start it out through Next Generation Count Your Vote movement, because there are 14 Republican United States congressmen in California. You know, in all the blue states, if you get out there aren't the voter suppression tactics they use in the 26 or so red states where they're keeping, we might not be able to go through this, but if we can win the House and the Senate, and we got to win the Senate for the Supreme Court's sake, I hear you,
Jim, and the and thank you for encouraging people to vote. And making sure not only to vote, to make sure your ballot gets counted, make sure you haven't been suppressed, make sure you haven't been taken off the voter rolls, even encourage your friends to check likewise if there is going to. The only reason there wouldn't be I hesitate to say the only. Anytime I say the only, I worry if I should say the only. I will say the greatest threat to a significant wave change election will be anti-democratic, and I don't mean big D, I mean small d, anti-democracy efforts, anti-voting, anti-participation, voter suppression efforts to quell the will of the people is really the only way there won't be a significant, again, I hesitate to say only, is that is the biggest threat to a wave change election. There are a few thoughts I wanted to respond to before the break. One, the question is, well, is the Republican Party just a fascist mafia? I hesitate just to engage in name calling. I don't hesitate for others to do so necessarily, but I hope to be at least to some degree a fair arbiter of the discussion, although hopefully relatively transparent about my own viewpoint. I don't want to rush to just name-calling, but if the definition of fascism is authoritarian white supremacy, and if the definition of or the understanding of a mafia is a violent or at least economically favor-trading organization that also engages in crime, then, yeah, I think it is a fair critique of some elements of our government. This is what the Mueller investigation is about. If there are some elements, and what elements are there now that are wielding too much influence, that are both borderline or well across the border of white supremacist, and that are economically favor trading in criminal ways, and are in significant power in the country, I think it's real. So you use the names you want to use. I'll use more words and maybe say less. Also, lethal force, yeah, you make a good argument. I'm sort of surprised we haven't heard from the NRA saying, oh, well, Dr. Blasey Ford just had a gun. Of course, they don't want to say that because they want to get their judge. And then to get back to voting before the break, that if the only thing we do, and here's part of my critique, if the only thing we do is watch the news, and what's the news? What's the stuff that's new? It's stuff that's brand spanking new, like today, Rod Rosenstein saying, and I know I say both pronunciations because I forget sometimes which it is, so I go back and forth, that he wanted to wiretap Trump, apparently. And that's the news. We've also got to consider the olds. We've also got to consider the ongoing themes, the bass notes. My argument is that is democracy. And so voting is not only the way to have a little tide, but to have over time a shift.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
This is the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jeff. We'll be back in just a couple minutes. Hi, we're on with Ocean County, New Jersey. Doesn't want to give her name. Wanted to make the point that women are always living in fear, and now finally they are speaking up. Thank you for calling in. Go ahead.
Yes, hi, Jefferson. Thank you so much. I just want to bring out an important point that hasn't been made yet. And I'm nervous, so just bear with me
Go ahead.
A second. The fact of the matter is that women have been preyed on for thousands of years by men. So it used to be illegal for women to not wear dresses and skirts. There were laws making it illegal for women to wear pants, which is insane. And that reason is to make it easy access for men to have their way with us whenever they felt like it. We were traded for cattle, for anything, dowries, you know, whatever. And we never know who is out there. We never know what men's intentions are. The fact of the matter is that there are too many men out there that have ulterior agendas, that have basically like a double life. I found out that someone I was with for over almost 15 years had a massive collection of simulated rape porn. So you never know what type of person you're dealing with, and you never know. I have been assaulted, I've been cornered, I've been put in really messed up situations, and I'm trying to not curse because I'd love to just speak freely. But the fact of the matter is you know, you can never judge, you know, how a woman or a girl reacts to that type of situation, and everyone should always believe the woman, because why in God's name would she say or admit or make something up that is so sick? I've witnessed men following people around, completely exposed, driving around, luring girls. I've seen right across the street from my schools, men masturbating right there, and the schools did nothing. I've had family members raped and assaulted. I've had friends raped and assaulted. I've had good friends of mine that I thought were decent, you know, normal, just boys, and we were all hanging out and, you know, drinking and stuff, and apparently the girl went, you know, to the other room, and I guess, you know, maybe wanted to hook up with one of the guys. Well, a bunch of them all went in there, and she wound up, you know, over, you know, as time went on, alcohol kicked in more, and they all were somewhere in the closet. They were all taking their turns, and when I realized what was going on, I flipped the F out, and I told them, I will call the cops right now, and I will call the school, and I will make sure everybody knows. Women, no one should be silent, and it's time for women to actually, you know. Hello?
You're not cut off. Finish your thought. They're
okay,
just going to break.
Okay. So the thing is that men feel threatened now that women are actually trying to take a stand. And if women, you know, make comments to men and kind of try to keep them in their place, guys normally have a huge issue with that. And it's just us trying to take power back.
Thank you so much, Ocean City, New Jersey, for calling. This is the Tom Hartman Show. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Show. In the break, there were heartfelt thoughts shared. Thank you for sharing those thoughts. I think it is easy to transfer the pain and transfer the blame on just the current occupant of the White House. We've also got to look at ourselves. We've got to look at our country. We've got to look at not only the last couple of years or even the last couple of decades, but the last couple of millennia. And thank you to the callers who have helped elevate and deepen our understanding. Let's go back to getting through as many calls as we can. Let's go fast. Savannah, Georgia, we've got Jim. Go ahead.
Hey, Justin. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. To that lady who just called in, she sounds like a real nice lady, and I just hate to hear her talking about those kind of stories. I hope she realizes that all men aren't like that. But I wanted to ask you a question. Can you put out there for us a little bit more about your guest mentioned, you mentioned that Brett Kavanaugh lied about some things during the questioning in the Senate. Could you give us a little bit more details so we can do a little bit more research on that?
I can, and I want to live up to the title of Speed Round. So the very briefest, it had mostly to do with documents that proved that he had said he didn't play a role in certain elements of the Bush administration that he did, in fact, play a role in. I might have more time at the very end to get into it more. But right now, I want to get to Maria, who's been waiting patiently on WCPT Ain't Afraid of Me from Evanston.
Hi, Jefferson.
Hi, Maria.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
My question is, since you've practiced law or went through law school, if Dr. Ford, we're all hoping it will go better than what we're anticipating, if it comes down where he is voted in, Kavanaugh, and I heard that in Maryland there's no restrictions for bringing a case forward, no time limits, if she, I know it must be horribly painful to go through all this with the media and all the horrible attacks on her and her family. How can anybody imagine that? If she decided to bring it forward, a case against him, could that prevent him from being a Supreme Court justice?
There is no particular restriction on what it takes to be a Supreme Court justice. You don't have to be a lawyer. You don't have to have passed the bar. You have to be a citizen. of the United States.
No, I didn't mean about a lawyer.
I get that. But yeah. there's not. But yeah. but merely having been merely ha- being accused of or even convicted of a crime would not, by rule, keep someone off the Supreme Court. As a practical matter, had there been a conviction, he would not have been appointed. Had there been a conviction, he would not be confirmed. That is why there is the debate right now. You're right that in Maryland there is no, and I just looked it up to make sure, there is no statute of limitations on rape in Maryland. What I'm not sure is about assault. The statute of limitations rules in Maryland for the conduct that Dr. Blasey Ford has accused Brett Kavanaugh of, whether in Maryland that would be called attempted rape or sexual assault or under another term, and I don't know what the statute of limitations there is. There might still be a cause of action, and that's a question that we can do a little bit more research on. But whether or not that would keep him off the court, as the as Oliver Wendell Holmes said, what a judge will do is all I mean by law. Well, in this context, what the Senate will do is all I mean by what it takes for a Supreme Court justice to be confirmed. Howard, let's take your call. Go ahead from Indiana.
Yes, I'm right here. Two things I'll bring up, and you may have answered them previously. This I haven't been on this show for a while. The one is Dr. Ford waited 36 years to come forth with this information, which I guess she typed out in a letter. She presented it to Senator Feinstein. Senator Feinstein holds it for 5 or 6 weeks and makes it public. Why taking all this time is going to help solve evidently a potential issue?
There's been speculation. I've got it. And thank you everybody for calling. We've got to go. We're about to wrap the show. The arguments that have been made were that it was the desire of Dr. Blasey Ford not to be public. So it wasn't until Dr. Blasey Ford started becoming obvious that she was going to be outed that the Capitol Buzz Chamber was talking about it, that she ended up going to the Post and allowed herself to go public. I want to say this before we go, because I promised that I would. First of all, thank you again for being a part of the Tom Hartman community, for supporting this show, for supporting Free Speech TV, for supporting your local purpose-driven radio station. As we move into the fall, and today is the last day before the fall, elected Democrats and vocal leaders will be grappling with a moral, constitutional, tactical, and strategic conundrum, and that is whether or not to make a public call for impeachment. The case for no, the investigation isn't over, the facts aren't all gathered, Pence is no savior, impeachment doesn't seem to poll that well. As a matter of principle, we shouldn't take it lightly or hastily or rush such a process. Connecting impeachment to elections seems opportunistic and motivates the Trump and Republican base. The case for yes, the president is historically unfit and dangerous. There's mounting evidence supporting high crimes and misdemeanors. The fate of the republic may depend on changing national leadership. Many people want Trump impeached, and impeachment demands can build lists and energy. How do you wrestle with this? The suggestion that we have talked about here, call for more than impeachment. Impeachment might be necessary, but it will not uproot oligarchy or white supremacy. It will not restore a stolen Supreme Court or ensure a woman's safety or her right to choose. It will not restore separated families or save 1,400 lives per year from gutted climate protections. We need to build a movement, a pro-democracy movement, a benevolent community that looks out for all of us. It builds a stronger democracy. Thank you so much for being with us. I hope you enjoyed summer. The fall starts next. This has been the Tom Hartman Show. I'm Jefferson Smith. Love you.
Been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.